Before we get started, I want to tell you why I keep urging you to use KISS Insights. Haven't you noticed that one of the big ideas that keeps coming up in my interviews is the need to ask your customers and users what they want instead of imagining that you know? Now, when you add a survey to your website, isn't it true that hardly anyone fills out your survey, and people who do fill it out aren't necessarily your typical users? Well, what KISS Insights does is give you surveys that are so easy to fill out that your users will actually complete them. Here's a screenshot of how I use KISS Insights. You can use it for free right now. Just go to kissinsights.com. Next thing I want to show you is the phone number at the top of dnamail.com. When you have trouble with your email and it's costing your business both money and reputation, how frustrating is it? Well, who can you call at those moments? If you use DNA Mail, you'll have a phone number you can call 24/7. DNA Mail offers complete hosted exchange, free setup, free activation, free support, and if you and your company need Google Apps, they've got you covered there too. DNAMail.com. These aren't just sponsorships, these are tools you should use. Finally, I want you to know about Shopify.com. If you already have an online store and want to increase your sales, go to Shopify.com. If you have an idea for an online store, go to Shopify.com. With Shopify, they'll set up your store in minutes. You'll get professional themes to customize your store. You'll even get a mobile app to manage your store from anywhere. Check out Shopify.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. Today I've got with me Gabriel Weinberg. Everybody knows Gabriel today as the founder of DuckDuckGo. He's a guy who's taking on Google, building a search engine, and actually you're getting a lot of converts in the tech community who are using your search engine. And a lot of us also know him as the guy who's getting buzz on Hacker News, on CNN, on New York Times. I read you last week. TechCrunch loved your ambition and what you're able to do. I think they compared you to Cool after after a website that you created and said, look at how much this guy's doing with no money compared to Cool that aspired to so much with a lot of money and isn't getting any traction. Excuse me. Most recently, we've been finding out a lot about you as an angel investor and your thoughts on that. But all of that is interesting, and I'll be asking you that. What I'm especially interested in, Gabriel, is that business that you launched a long time ago, back in 2002, the one that you sold for a reported $10 million, and that's the one that if my understanding is correct, that whose sale is helping fund DuckDuckGo and helping fund the lifestyle that you're living and helping you invest in other companies. Am I right about that?
You are absolutely right.
I gotta clear my throat over here. We're doing this interview at a special time because I've been especially interested in doing an interview with Gabriel, and this was the only time that we can find that fit both of our schedules, which is why I'm sounding a little hoarse. It's my second interview of the day, Gabriel. But for you, I would wake up in the middle of the night to do an interview.
Thanks.
What was that company that you launched back in 2002, the one that you sold for $10 million?
The company was called Opobox, O-P-O-B-O-X, and that name has nothing to do with the site. The site was called Names Database, and it's namesdatabase.com.
And why'd you have two different names?
Well, it started out as a completely separate company that my business partner was running, and it was an email list management company like Constant Contact or something like that. And we decided to he was not getting far on that idea, and so he brought me on, and we decided to be 50-50 partners. And then we tried a bunch of different other ideas until we sort of hit on the Names Database. So we didn't feel like changing the company, of course, or anything like that.
And I did so much reading about you today and about that business to find out how you grew it, and you guys are going to love the way that he grew it, because this was a lot of you must have really been driven to find every angle and every way of growing your audience back then and every way of growing a business. We'll get into that in a moment. Why don't we tell people how big the business was? How many people in the database?
At the time of acquisition, there was about 22 million registrations and people have, you know, signed up. And it was about 1 million revenue run rate and then about 1 million cumulative revenue too. And Let's see. And after acquisition, it grew about another 10 million people in the database.
Okay, so when you say a million revenue, you mean from the time you launched it, 2002, to the time you sold it, 2006, $1 million in revenue in that whole time.
Yep. The first few years there wasn't much revenue, so it pretty much was ramping up. All the revenue happened near the end, and it was the curve was sort of exponential, and so it was cumulative 1 million, but it was also 1 million run rate, meaning that month to month, we were, if you extrapolate that out to 12 months, it would have been 1 million when we sold it, and it projected to be more the next year, et cetera.
Okay. All right. Yeah, run rate is a phrase that I'm hearing a lot in my interviews. You know
Well, I use a
what
lot of jargon, so I feel I need to explain it
I
probably.
No, I'm glad that you did. I never used to understand what run rate was. I assumed run rate was, actually, I didn't really know what it was. I just kind of assumed it was revenue. And it somehow lined up with annual sales. Well, what I'm discovering is exactly what you do. You say, how much did we make last month? What if we annualize that by multiplying last month's revenue by 12? What's the total annual revenue that would come out? Well, that's our run rate. All
It
right.
makes us feel a little better, I guess, because you don't have to trailing and all forward looks worse, better than trailing if you're doing well,
And hell, you got to 22 million people in your database. That's incredible. How much funding did you get for the business?
Zero funding is completely self-funded, and it basically required no funding.
Whole scrappy operation here. Let's talk about why the initial business, why the initial model didn't work out, some of the ideas that you picked along the way, and then we'll get into the names database. But before we do that, the number that I have, I said it's a reported $10 million. Usually when I say that, it means that I saw it in some news site. This came from United Online, the company that bought you, from a press release that they sent out. So we can say that that's accurate, right?
Yep, it was public. It's totally accurate.
Well, okay. All right, so then why didn't the email list management business work out?
So I sort of came on at the tail end of that. It may have worked out. I mean, one of the lessons learned for me in a bunch of ideas that I tried before the names database is that I gave up too early, and didn't really push through. And so that whole model, of list management. I see, you just did your SendGrid interview. I mean, I think that's a completely viable business. I just don't think we sort of waited it out and didn't try enough things.
But you needed to make money. Do you think that you would have been able to at least make enough money to keep yourself going until that business became a hit?
I mean, so again, I came in at the tail end, so it was sort of on the way out. Right when I was coming on. But yeah, I think if there was some sales hustling going on, I think we could have easily signed on some clients and started to make enough revenue to keep it going.
Okay, so you're brought on board, you're supposed to help build this business. What was the next product that you came out with? How did you direct it?
So the next thing we tried was we built this coupon site. And it was very much like the coupon sites, that are leading today, like, Deal Tracker and all those other ones. And the idea was, of course, that we would give people coupons on all the major online retail sites, and then also maybe, have a browser plugin or something like that. And we've probably spent 6 months on that. Again, gave up probably too early. I mean, in retrospect, I don't regret anything, but like we were sort of looking for things to hit traction pretty quickly. And it really wasn't taking, and it didn't seem like the affiliate model was really working for us either. Like people were using the site, but the sales weren't coming in. I don't know exactly why, whether they weren't track the people who were supposed to be giving us money weren't tracking it correctly. We're tracking it, but in any case, it wasn't really generating any revenue, so we sort of moved on.
And the revenue in a business like that comes from linking over to affiliate programs, right? And you don't just link over to their homepage, you link over to a special deal that you find on those websites. And then through affiliate programs like Commission Junction, I get, or maybe the merchant's homegrown affiliate program, your revenue is tracked and then paid out to you.
Exactly.
So did you actually got traffic to that site? How'd you do it? And how much did you
Yeah.
get?
I don't remember exactly, but a lot of stuff I got initial traffic from for it was from SEO. And I think we had like a page, like they do today, a page for each kind of company and the deals for that company currently, and so that it was getting traffic that way mainly.
I see. And this is search engine optimization back in the early 2000s, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was really so I was sort of fascinated by that at the time. I mean, I'm still fascinated by it, but it was a lot easier just to like put up almost anything and get traffic. So, we tried that for a bunch of different ideas, and that's sort of how the Names database arose too.
What could you have done differently there? In retrospect, what would you have done instead of giving up? What could you have done to build that business?
I mean, oh, not. I haven't thought about that hard. I don't think it's a great business, to be honest. Like it didn't end up being a big killer category for the web, even though people thought it would be, and no one's really still captured it. I mean, I guess we could have moved into a commission junction type of thing, and that might have been the way to go.
You mean
But at the time,
by managing other people's affiliate programs?
yeah. But at the time, we didn't really think of that.
All right, what was the next business?
I spent a decent amount of time building a simpler email client. The idea being, we were both very into simple software, and so the idea of a simpler email client really appealed to me. And I sort of got, I probably spent a few months on that, but I was also doing side things, including Names database stuff, and so we sort of dropped it when the Names database started to get more traction. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad idea. Our approach at the time was not great, though. I mean, it was a, we were still doing a download.com type of client, and it probably should have been a web, like a Gmail type of thing. But I've always thought there was need for better email solutions. But since Gmail came along, I mean, Gmail's generally good, except for my slowness issue of late.
The Gmail issue, this Gmail slowness issue is what got you into the New York Times blog last week. And I remember reading that, and that's what I finally said. Listen, I got to get Gabriel on here already. How is he invading my world from every direction? And it's a one-man operation that you've got at DuckDuckGo. You're the man.
That's right.
And you're a full-time stay-at-home dad, too.
That is also correct.
How are you getting so much freaking attention? And I got to come back to that later. I've got it up on my screen, but I'm going to write it down in big letters on my paper here to talk about how you're getting so much buzz for DuckDuckGo. All right, before I ask you about Names database, let me ask you about traction, since I know that you do interviews around that. And we just talked a little bit about how you tried one idea, then another, then another, then another, and I was laughing through part of it, not because I thought it was ridiculous, because I've seen that in myself, and I also have seen that in many of the interviews that I've done. I've also seen people who do things the way that you are at DuckDuckGo, who say, this is my one thing, I've got to just spend all my time on it until it grows. What do you think about those two different approaches?
So I've sort of come on more to the latter approach, but of the you really got to focus on something for a while and try to make it work. However, to actually do that, you have to be pretty good at or pretty confident that your idea is actually viable. And so that's not an actually easy thing to do, especially for first-time entrepreneurs, right? And so if your idea sort of sucks, you probably should move on, right? I think it's a hard call when to do that and when to not do it. And that's really the tricky part.
How do you
It's
know
like,
when to do it and when not to do it?
so I think there's some things to look for now that I've, come to believe to look for, which is you're really looking for like a spark of engagement with your customers and users. And so you launch something early and then see what people do. Are people coming back to your site? Are people trying to buy it from you? Are people giving you unsolicited feedback or asking you to do unsolicited things like invest in you or even buy your company right out? Those kind of things are indication that you may want to spend more time on your idea, even if it's not really getting a lot of traction like really taking off. If it's like flatlining completely, either you're not communicating your idea effectively, i.e. people aren't even understanding what you're doing, and that might be the barrier, or you probably need to move on.
I see. Okay, and at what point with DuckDuckGo did you start getting feedback from people where they were asking you for certain features or giving you or telling you about what they'd like different about the site?
So pretty much immediately when I launched it, I saw that kind of reaction and engagement, although it took me a while to launch it because I remember your interview with Chris Dixon. He was saying that his product, you know, had to be somewhat complete before he launched it, and that actually took a while. The same is true with DuckDuckGo. So I was working probably for a year before I launched anything. But immediately when I did, I sort of soft launched it on Hacker News just to see what people would think and sort of get that feedback I'm talking about. And I was sort of immediately motivated thereafter that I was onto something.
Okay, going back to Names Database, what was it like at first? What did the product look like when you launched it?
So you'll find this amusing probably. So there was no product initially. I had randomly put up pages of names from the census that I paired together, first names and last names, and just put up these pages. They weren't linking to anything. They had no links on them. They were basically just random names of people that probably exist because I paired the popular names together, but there were about 10,000 of them, or maybe 100,000, I don't remember. So I put those up and didn't really give it a second thought. And then about 6 months later, Google started indexing them. And I put them up on a hunch that a lot of people were searching names and there weren't a lot of results for them. And so when they got indexed, they started immediately getting traffic, like 10,000 hits a day. And so the question really, I had sort of a weird problem that a lot of people don't have probably, where I had traffic and didn't have a business. And so the question became, okay, what can we do with this traffic? And so that's really the genesis of it.
Okay. Was it called the Names Database at the time, before you had a product, back when you were just creating pages with names on them?
No, I had this domain, which I no longer have, that I had for, I don't know, 10 years or something, malism.com, where I had put all sorts of weird side projects and little things I was doing. You know, I had like 10 other projects I didn't even mention to you before. And one of them was names.malism. I had them all in subdomains. So names.malism.com, all the pages were there. Once we started launching the business, then we looked for a domain name, and I bought namesdatabase.com for like $300 or something.
Okay. All right. So then what did you first decide to do with all that traffic?
So the first thing we wondered whether people would just sign up for something. So we put up a sign up form. We linked the page. We put a link on the top of the page, and it linked to a sign up form. And the sign up form didn't go anywhere and didn't really say what it was or anything. It just was a sign up form. And people signed up, about like 300 people a day.
It didn't say what it was. It was just a sign up form.
Just to sign a form.
Just give me your first name, last name, email address, submit?
Yep.
Okay.
And just sort of a baseline, just see what would happen. And so people did submit it. And so then the question became, okay, people will submit stuff. What can we do? What can we do with signups? You know, what product can we build or anything? And the simplest path was, we had all these names and people were signing up because they had searched a name. So we thought, you know, they're probably looking for this person. So what if we, you know, just create a database of names and help people connect with each other? So that's sort of what the product became. Although, like, at the beginning, there's like 10,000 people in it. The chance of you finding anyone is very slim. The first thing we did really was for sales, just to see if anyone would buy anything, was create a watch where you could pay like $5, and if someone ever signed up with that name, we would send you an email and say, this person just signed up with this name. You might want to come back and check it out.
What do you mean? If I signed up Andrew Warner and said,
so you're looking for me, like Gabriel Weinberg. You search Gabriel Weinberg, get to this page, and you're like, okay, where is he? You sign up and then you say, okay, Gabriel Weinberg's not in this database yet, but he may be in the future. So I'm gonna pay you to let me know when he signs up so that at that point I can get in contact with him. This was a very convoluted product that did not last very
I see.
long, but
They would pay you to alert them when Gabriel Weinberg signed up. I see. Okay. And how did the watch fit in?
We just called it watch, like
I see.
not
You weren't giving them a
literally.
watch. You were letting them watch the site to see when they were coming
Yes.
on.
It's a terrible name, it was a terrible product. But people bought it. Like the first day I put up, someone, I mean, like the next hour, someone bought a watch. Impulse buy.
Well, okay. How much were you charging for it?
$4.99.
Why did you stop?
The watch?
Yeah, I mean, if people are already paying, why not tweak it?
Well, we did tweak it. We ended up trying to dip a bunch of different things like pay per message and pay for like a bundle of messages. We ended up just doing a subscription in the end after testing different things. Just sort of like what Classmates does, like you can search for anything for free. You can search the whole database for free. And in fact, we put it on the web for SEO stuff. But then if you ever want to message someone, you needed to quote unlock the database. And to do that, you'd buy the subscription for 1 or 3 years.
Okay, so if I did a search for who do I if I did a search for Gabriel Weinberg on Google, I would end up on your website. I would see a message that said something like, do I have the exact language here? I've got it somewhere in my notes. It said, "Are you looking for Gabriel Weinberg? Click here." I click over, and then I end up with a form that I have to fill out with my information, right? And then we'll get to what happened later in the process, but that Gabriel Weinberg at the top of the page, did you create a page for each person in your database that was like that, or was it created dynamically based on what they searched for?
Dynamically.
Okay, so then how did that get indexed if it was dynamic?
So the pages, it was on the page, but there's too many. Google will only index so many pages per domain. So when you get to 22 million pages, you have to be like a really important site to get them, like Wikipedia, to get indexed that high. So what we did was, eventually we ended up doing a page for each last name, and then a page for each high school. And so your name was probably on that page somewhere, but and it may not have been if it paired a last name and first name that wasn't exactly the last name and first name. But in any case, you got to that page because it matched a first name and last name on that page, and then we would detect the search string and put a link at the top.
Okay, and would the full name be somewhere on that page?
Yeah, well, it probably would, but certainly the first name and the last name were in there somewhere.
I see, okay. All right, pretty cool. All right, so then somebody comes into this page, sees the name of a person that they haven't been in touch with in a long time, and they say, "Aha, I'd love to connect with them. This site allows me to do it. I will enter my name and email address and maybe my school. I'll hit submit." What do they see on the next page?
So that SEO part was the beginning, but it ended up that almost all of our growth was through this viral engine that I created. And so almost immediately, we were getting 300 signups a day, but that would take that seems like a lot to start, but that would take forever to get to 22 million. And so the question became really, and this was an intellectual question that turned into a business. Could we engineer a viral system? That a lot of viral systems are, based on product and word of mouth and stuff like that. But could we literally engineer one? And so, I spent the first 6 to 9 months just working on that problem, and we ended up doing some sort of wacky things that I think other people wouldn't necessarily do, or want to do. But the main one that got it kicked off was on this page, the second page after you signed up. We asked you to refer 5 of your friends before you even saw anything on the inside. Now you may have, there's incentive in a lot of cases, like in the SEO case, that you want to get in there to search for your friend. So you may have an idea what's going on. And there was an about page, and there was stuff under the sign-up form eventually about what the site was and everything. But a lot of people didn't necessarily read that, so they get to the second page and they want to click through. And we immediately say, no, you can't click through first. First, you got to refer 5 friends. And there was a lot of back-end logic because people immediately try to skip it or fake it or put in their own email addresses, and we would tell them, no, you can't do that. We would detect bounces on the fly. We would detect that they were trying to put in their own email addresses, etc., and we'd sort of make them refer their friends. And so that ended up working. I mean, that that created this, it fueled this viral engine, and it grew exponentially.
Actually, even people who didn't like the way that you did that were big admirers of how you check the email address's validity on the fly. And I was looking through message boards where people said, I can't believe this is happening. He's emailing all of my friends, but check out the way that he's doing it. Because you can't just put in a@b.com. And then you would email their friends and say to their friends, look, your friend thinks that you should join this website. Click here to go join the website, and so on.
Yes, just like a regular referral kind of program.
All right. And if they didn't want to put in, actually, before we move on, you said something that was interesting. You said you spent 6 to 9 months just working on that problem, trying different ideas. What are some of those ideas?
So I did a bazillion A-B tests, basically, because to actually get to something engineered viral where you don't really have a strong word of mouth or branding component is actually very difficult. Because if you think about it, you have the sign up form, and then the refer form, and then you have to get people to click through the email. So each of those has pretty big drop-off points. And if any of those have serious drop-off, there's no way you're getting exponential. So in the end, we ended up, we had about 30% of the people who got emailed to click through. We got about 70% of the people who clicked through to sign up on that form. And then on average, people submitted about 3.5 email addresses when they signed up. And so when you multiply that all together, and there were ranges based on ages and countries and stuff like that, you get just above what you need to be exponential. And so for each of those processes, I was running tests all the time to try to eke out another 1% here, 1% there. And there were some crazy things I was trying. So for instance, on the second page where you refer your friends, one day I wanted to just find out like what the baseline is of this UI. And so there was a description on the top, and I would tweak the description to try to get entice people. So one day I was just like, does this description have any value? So I made it literally like gibberish. It wasn't even English. It wasn't any language. It made no sense. And still, you know, we got like 25% of people in that cohort to complete the page. Like, they were paying little attention to the text at the top. They were really just clicking the button and trying to get through. So stuff like that. And even like one word changes here and there made big differences.
What are some of the, give me another crazy thing that you did, something that maybe you couldn't say outside of a Mixergy interview, but because you understand that we all do all kinds of bullshit while we're testing out our business, you could be free to say it here.
I don't know if I had anything super crazy. Like, I would try things that just seemingly crazy to me, that seemingly shouldn't work or would have no, you wouldn't think about it working. So like, for instance, we ended up going with the email that people send, we send out, ended up being HTML, but at the top of it, I just made this like one day, just this sort of checkered pastel Easter thing at the top, and for no particular reason, but that helped. It like increased it by like 2%.
Just having some checkered image that had something to do with Easter.
Yeah, it actually wasn't an image. We it was HTML table with background colors in there, because we found that images actually reduce the click through.
Right.
But yeah, just random stuff like that. Some other non-intuitive things. I don't know, we made the whole site HTTPS eventually, encrypted, which eked out another 2%.
Why?
I don't know. So that's the thing. Some of these mechanisms or reasons behind, I still don't have a great answer for you. I mean, I guess in this case, you could say, well, people maybe thought the lock icon at the top of their browser, they thought it was more secure or something. But it definitely helped.
And you said that 70% of the people who saw that email that came from their friends clicked it, came over to the website?
About 30% would come through.
Okay,
would
so
click it.
You get an 100 people get the email, 30% of them.
Well, a bunch of those are probably bounced. A bunch of those. Well, we could detect bounces straight up, but a lot of people actually don't bounce, like AOL in some cases, like don't bounce immediately. And so some of the emails they're like silent bounces, right? So some of the emails never reach the people. So of the 100 emails we send out, 30 clicked through.
Wow, okay. And then of the 30, 70% filled in the form?
Yes.
And gave in their friends' names?
So they got 70% got through that step. And then on the next step, an average of 3.5 emails were submitted.
Wow, that's unreal. That's
so
unreal.
About like 40% or 45% of the people completed that page.
Now, I saw a few versions of the site. One actually said users must submit 20 email addresses or pay $12 a year subscription. Did you find, actually, how'd you end up on 20 email addresses and then
right.
How'd you end up on the $12 a year subscription?
So there were other parts of the viral engine. And what happened is over time, this is part of the risk of the business, email deliverability has just gone down and down and people clicking on emails has gone down and down. And like, I don't have the stats with me right now, but basically every year people were tracking this, it was going down, which obviously isn't good for a viral engine built on email. And so over on, we would add different things. So one of the things we added, like you mentioned, is we had this paid subscription, but you could get a free subscription if you submitted 24 email addresses of your friends. The ones you had submitted before also count, but so that was one path to increase the viral engine. The other thing we did before other sites had done really was upload your address book kind of thing. And so that wasn't a formal part of the process like it is on a lot of sites now, but it was always at the top of the site. And people would just do that. People who are actually interested in the company once they got into it would actually just do that ad hoc. But that actually pushed us over the edge when we were getting acquired. It helped us grow even faster.
At what point in the process did you have that?
Did we add the address book?
Yeah.
I do not remember.
No, I mean, at what point people ask, what was the incentive for them to upload their address book? From what I could see,
no
it was
exactly...
There
was no incentive whatsoever.
Sorry? None.
There was no incentive whatsoever. I mean,
we just
didn't...
upload your address book.
Yeah, it was just at the top in the header. It said, like, names database, and then underneath it said just, like, upload your address book. And it had links to the different providers, like AOL, Hotmail, Gmail. But there was no... It wasn't an explicit part of the process, and there was no incentive, really. I mean, that would be an area that we probably would have focused on next, you know, integrating it better, but...
And still people did that.
Yeah.
See, that's the part I couldn't figure out. I did see it. It wasn't, there was no Gmail. There was Yahoo at the top. And it was just these links hanging up at the top of the page. And I couldn't figure out why would anyone need to fill that out to go through it. I see. And in the future, you would have incorporated that maybe into step two of the registration process or instead of, or in addition to allowing people to type in their own 24 email addresses of their friends. I see.
Yep.
Because one of the complaints that I saw on message boards was I had to copy and paste 20 email addresses of my friends.
It actually did work. If you went to the upload the address book and then went to the free unlock, you'd often just get it for free because it carried over.
I see. Okay.
But it wasn't integrated into the process yet.
It's mind-boggling, though. The people at the time would go and copy email addresses from their address book and then paste them into your site one at a time.
So one of the things we studied was that free unlock. Well, one... The viral process was important, so if that was helping, we wanted to keep it. But one of the things that was interesting was whether it was cannibalizing sales. And when we studied it, it actually wasn't cannibalizing sales at all. The people who were doing the free unlock were generally younger and often international and were not purchasing for whatever reason, probably because they didn't have easy access to credit cards or funds. And so it was basically a different subset of people who would do the free unlock versus the paid subscription.
Okay. And did you find that charging for subscriptions helped get more email addresses because now you put a value on it?
It's certainly so we didn't have the free unlock before the subscription. The subscription came
I
first.
see.
And so I don't have good data on that, but I'm sure that it would have. I mean, it had to. It would have to.
By the way, I'm looking at the live chat room here. The numbers are going down, so it's telling me that there are fewer people now in the room than there were when we started. What the hell's wrong with people? This guy built using viral marketing, a site that nobody heard of that got millions of people. How many people did we say? 20 million people to sign up. And listen to the way that he's doing it. This is why I don't care about numbers in the room. If all those dopes want to leave and they don't see the value of this, let them leave. I understand that all those people would love it if I had Groupon's founder on here because Groupon is hot today. And I will. But believe me, you're going to get more insight now, years after the fact, than you would during. The founder of Groupon, I'm sure, is hiding tons of stuff today. 10 years from now, I'll do an interview with him, and then I'll say, Andrew, listen to me. Here's what I did. And that's when I think it'll be even more interesting. All right, I see in the chat room is asking, how do people react to the email that they got from their friends saying, go join this site, go join the names database?
So we tried a bunch of different things. I mean, and so basically, because we were going so wide, and so the audience that it could be sent to was anyone, because people would upload their address book, people would just enter in their family and friends. The demographics were just ridiculous. I mean, all over the world. And so when we tested different things, the least amount of information we put in the email converted the best. And so the email basically just said, your friend sent you this, click through. I don't remember the exact text, but it was very minimal text. And so I think they either thought, I don't know what they thought, but they thought my friend sent me this and I'm gonna click on it.
All right, this is over 5 years ago, or over 4 years ago. It's been a long time now. Standards have changed, and it's been a long time. Let me ask you this. You were hiding things from people at the time, right? You weren't being very clear when they entered their friends' email addresses that their friends would get solicited to join the website.
It was clear.
It was clear.
Yeah.
How clear was it?
I think it was pretty clear. I mean, so if you were going through the site and you never read anything, see, this is the problem. People don't read anything, but there was an extensive explanation page linked off the front of the site. There was information on the front page. And then when you actually entered in the email address, there was an alert that popped up, that was like, your friend's going to, get an email. And there was an alert, another confirm alert. And so there were a bunch of mechanisms where you should have received that information. But nevertheless, I think most people were totally fine with it. There were a few people who were very angry, but as I've written it in a post one time, when you get to like 22 million people, or even we had about 1 million a month, and we had more emails going out than that because not everyone would sign up, obviously. You get these 1 in a million crazy people. So, if you do 1 million emails a month, you're going to get that 1 in a million crazy person. There's no two ways about it.
All right, and crazy people are loud, especially on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's par for the course.
Okay, let's see if we have any other questions here about the site. The email address book seems like you did that before Facebook did. The ability for people to import the addresses from their email address book. Is that true?
I believe that's so. I was constantly looking at all the other sites out there for features to maybe copy or use. And I had played around with it, but it wasn't that great. And I think I saw a better implementation of one of them at high5.com. And their interface was better than what I had done before. And so I decided to revisit it and do a bunch more services. And so there didn't really exist at the time. Now you can buy like software off the shelf to do it on like all the services or use a widget or something, but it didn't exist at the time at all. And so there were some random scripts that people had put together for various sites, but I had to like sort of hack it all together. So when I took that second look after seeing the high five, I put it all together, and then almost instantly when I got it up, it took off. People submitted their address books and.
Stay-at-home dad. Do you need to go check
no,
out?
No, my wife's home.
Okay. All right. What about Tickled? I did an interview with Otis Chandler, who worked at Tickled.com at the time, and he said that they were cutting edge when it came to stuff like this, that they're some of the pioneers. Did you take a look at their stuff, the way that they
I
were...
believe that I did. I don't remember in particular, but I had a list of, like, I remember High Five in particular, but I had a list of, like, you know, 20 sites, and I was on top of everything going on in the space, and so I was constantly looking at all the new features people were doing.
Okay, let's see what else I've got here. Why was the company in Orem, Utah?
So the company wasn't in Orem, Utah. the company that bought us had a facility in Orem, Utah, and it moved there. It operated there after the sale. But both of us were in Boston during the whole time of the company.
Okay. And your contact information was in Boston?
Yep.
Orem, Utah, we were both laughing at that because there was a conspiracy theory in someone's chat room about that, that Orem, Utah, that is the place where you can get away with all kinds of stuff when it comes to mail order and internet. I don't know what the hell they were thinking. Somebody else had a theory about how they don't trust the Mormons, and the Mormons are in control of Utah, and they must have something to do with this. Really interesting theories there.
United Online had bought a company in Orem, Utah, and so they had Perl hackers there, and our site was written in Perl, and so that's why it ended up there.
Why did you sell?
There were a number of reasons. I mean, it comes down to the price. I mean, the it was going well. Like I said, we had a million revenue run rate, but I mean, to get from that to get to 10 million, you know, would take a while, and so it was attractive. And then in addition to that, there's a big risk in the business because it had this viral engine, which is based on email. And like I said, email deliverability was going down. And so we had to constantly come up with new ways to keep it going. And it seemed like maybe we were a little early because Classmates with little effort and was able to continue the growth, you know, for another year and a half or so. And so possibly we sold too early. There, I mean, there's a lot of things that we could have done differently, but I have no regrets about it.
You sold to United Online, which owns Classmates. Now, if anyone goes over to Names Database, it's just a home page. After submitting that first form, you end up on Classmates.com. What was it like to get that check?
I don't know. I mean, it was sort of surreal. I don't really have any particular sort of emotional memory about it.
You got a check for $10 million for the company. A big chunk of that went to you. What was that like, seeing that check, that piece of paper, after working for years trying to make this part of the business work and trying to make other businesses work before that? What was that like, that day that you took that to the bank, or that you first saw it?
It wasn't so climactic in the way that you're describing. I mean, like, the business had been going well. We've been getting good salaries. I had lived very cheaply, so I wasn't immediately going to go out and buy anything. Pretty conservative person. So didn't really have much of an impact on my life immediately, I'd say.
At what point did it? What did you get that was different? How did life change afterwards?
Not incredibly much. I mean, so we were moving to Boston, to Philadelphia. We were already considering buying a house. We bought a little bigger house, but not a ridiculous house or anything. I was clear that I didn't need to get a job immediately afterwards, and so I was interested in, you know, exploring my options and doing other startup stuff. And so that felt good that I could, you know, continue to work on startup stuff indefinitely. But that's really it. I mean, it just really opened up a little more options.
All right. Before I continue with the story, I got to ask you, what does your t-shirt mean? I'm seeing a big equation on this t-shirt for anyone who's listening to the MP3 version. What does that mean?
This is an MIT t-shirt. E over C squared equals MC squared is the M. I is the square root of negative 1. And T, this is the gas equation, PV equals NRT.
What am I missing here? The gas equation?
There are equations where each one is a separate science equation or math that means that variable. And so E equals MC squared, you know? And so yeah. The M is missing from this. So E over C squared is M.
Right.
And then I is
the square. Oh, I see. MIT, the school. Listen to me. Okay, I didn't catch that last part. See there, I'm showing my intelligence. If it has nothing to do with money or directly paying somebody or bringing in revenue, I just can't focus on it. Let's get back to what you did with the check. I'm kidding. all right, I had a list of questions here. Let me make sure that I included everything. All right, why did you start a search engine afterwards? Are you mad, man? What's going on?
So I started a separate site first that didn't really get a lot of traction. It was also related to search. I mean, so the basic premise was twofold. I saw a lot of spam increasingly in Google, useless sites and whatnot. And I was sort of dissatisfied with that. At the same time, there were these other sites like Wikipedia and Delicious in particular that had great links for topics. And so I could go search those and get better results than I was getting on Google. And so my bigger thought, which is sort of like Core is in a way, although their implementation is different, was that there's a lot of people who have a lot of information in their heads of the best links to go to for things. And they're way better than Google. And so the canonical example that I was using at the time was my wife and I took this stained glass class. And if you search like stained glass on Google, it doesn't give you great results. But if you go to the class, they gave you like a sheet of paper that was like, go check out these links and everything. I thought that was sort of compelling. I see the chat room, cough, mahalo. It was sort of like a mahalo idea, but it was a little before Mahalo.
That's started. What the previous business was? The one just before DuckDuckGo?
Yeah, exactly.
What was that company called?
I didn't even get far with it. I mean, I basically decided that it had a big chicken and egg problem. And it was going to be really hard to get people to input their stuff. And a better idea would be to use communities that already existed that were controlling spam and had good links, like Wikipedia and Delicious. And so I sort of discarded that and moved on to what became DuckDuckGo. And so it started with one weekend I hacked up a mashup of Wikipedia and Delicious. And so you could type in a term and it would give you the links from those places and rank them in a certain way. And I just wanted to see like how good those links were. And so for a lot of the fathead, if you will, of the search space, the top 10,000 queries or whatever, it performs really well. And so I sort of moved from there into thinking about, okay, well, how can I make a whole sort of search engine around that? And it sort of just incrementally improved from there.
I see. But what about the idea that Google is too strong? They've got deep pockets, that behind them was at the time Yahoo. Today you've got Microsoft, that the space was already locked up.
So I am a big believer that it's not locked up, that it may be the case that Google will have 90% or 80% market share for a long time, but there are UI differences that would appeal to non-negligible percentages of people. And so the main issue I have when I do customer development or whatever, talk to people who are less tech savvy about Google, and you really get into them using search, they have no idea what the result page really means. They like, it's not readable to them. They basically just click on links and go forward and back until they sort of see something that looks like it is what they want. But the page itself is utterly confusing. And so what I took away from
by links on Google search
is that they know that they're links and there's something to click on, but the titles and descriptions don't necessarily make sense. Why they should just click on one link versus the other. I mean, they know to go in order, I guess, but there's no, it's basically not understandable or readable. And so my approach ended up being, you know, can we take the result page and make it something that people would understand? So simpler titles and links, say, that were written by humans, this concept of zero-click info at the top of search, where you can get information without clicking anywhere, like a paragraph, say, summary of your search term, that kind of stuff.
I see. What about everything that worked for you at the previous company? Viral marketing, search engine optimization. What about all that? Have you been able to bring any of it here?
I've done a little SEO stuff. And so I've made some unique pages like these category pages of related topics that have gotten some search traffic, but not much. I basically threw it all out the window, which is not necessarily a great thing to do. I mean, I think the viral stuff is key. When I've been doing angel investing, I've been looking for things that have a potential to be viral in some way, and I've been trying to use my expertise to help them. But I mean, I would love to do something viral within DuckDuckGo, and I've been thinking about it, but I haven't come up with anything great.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with it for search engines. And now you've got a run rate of how much? 60,000 a year?
All right. So I just did the sponsorship thing, something like that. Yeah. Right. But eventually I want to do some kind of more contextual advertising, but, yeah.
All right. I've got the big capital letters here, Buzz, the word on my page to remember to ask you about that. Let's talk about that. How active are you in getting all these mentions?
These past few months, I have not been active much at all. They have happened somewhat organically on their own.
What did you do before?
So I decided one major change I did is at the beginning of the year, I decided to blog a lot more. And I committed to myself to do 100 posts of high quality posts. And so I've been doing that consistently over the last 6 months. So that's one big change. Another one is I've tried to, when I release what I think is an interesting feature, you know, that's unique, I've been trying to promote it on Reddit, you know, Hacker News, other places. Those are the main things. And I just think that I've been trying to listen. I've been really close to feedback. So there's a feedback button on every search page. I get a lot of feedback. I respond to all of it really quickly and try to synthesize it. And I've been trying to really go in directions that I know people will like, because I think the only way this really to grow is to grow by word of mouth. And so I'm really trying to wow people. So it's gotten better and better, and it's gotten to a point where people can easily switch to the search engine, and I have an about page that makes a pretty compelling reason to switch. And I think that has just sort of gotten to a point where people like it. I mean, people like the idea of an alternative search engine. People don't like monopolies, and they don't like, you know, being tracked and things like that.
What about the CNN article? How did CNN include DuckDuckGo when they were doing a roundup of search engines that are competing with Google?
So again, I had nothing to do with it. They just included it. I think though that, I mean, my guess would be that they either went to Wikipedia and looked for a list of search engines, which I am on Wikipedia, or they had Googled or Binged or whatever search engine, and I appeared on, you know, the first few pages.
How did you get into Wikipedia? You put yourself in there?
I didn't want to do that because
you're not
initially
supposed to.
Because you're not supposed to. So I waited until we had some traction, and then I asked our followers on Twitter if someone would make a page for us, and then they did so, and then it almost immediately got, like, it was going to get deleted for lack of sources. So then I did edit it a little bit to add sources, but I didn't add any bias or anything. But that's how I got in there.
Okay. And then how did you show up in Google for the term search engine?
I've been trying to do SEO around that term, obviously. So I've also bought AdWords, so they may have clicked on an AdWord, you know, like the on the left or on the top. But I have the title of the page, search engine DuckDuckGo, and on the front page, really the only one of the only pieces of text in the meta description is search engine. And when if I can try to get people to link to me, I try to encourage them to use the term search engine, but they don't always do so. But that's mainly it.
I will include search engine. I got to remember to do that.
Thank you.
All right. Hacker News, I see you on there a lot, and that's a good community to be a part of for a couple of reasons. First of all, they give you intelligent feedback, not just feedback about the color of the site, but useful information that you can use to improve your site. Second, I've been noticing more and more that when other writers are looking for stories, they go to Hacker News. I'll see a story, a random story on Hacker News, and suddenly it ends up on TechCrunch or Mashable or all these other blogs. And then, of course, they're good users. They're willing to go out there and actually try something new. You're actively courting that community, right?
Well, I wouldn't say courting. I'd say I was a part of it since the very beginning. I was on the site like basically the first day of launch, and I lurked for a long time before I actually signed up. But then I signed up and started contributing, and I've been contributing for, 3 years plus. So, I'd say I'm a part of the community.
Okay, all right. But you don't just submit. I think I commented on something and you emailed me directly. And one of the reasons that I've always felt a bond with you or a closeness or a friendship with you, even though we've never even talked, is because of that. So you don't just submit, you build relationships with it, with the site. How do you do that?
I try to reach out to people when I see something that's interesting, and just, try to get to know people. I try to comment when I think something's interesting. I mean, fundamentally, it's not like I'm trying to do it. I just enjoy the site and, I enjoy meeting other entrepreneurs, so.
What about the specific posts that are almost like Hacker News link bait? The ones where you will categorize all the Ask Hacker News questions and create a page that's just naturally going to bubble up to the top of Hacker News or other ideas like that.
So I created that page about 2.5 years ago, before Hacker News was a big community, out of interest. At that time, there were a lot of meta posts about like, why are you asking this question again? There were a lot more ask. It was a lot more startup focused, and it was a lot more ask HN focused. Like, can you tell me about what, camera to use for this, for doing Mixergy interviews or something? And so people kept asking the same questions, and so I decided to categorize them, and just out of fun for the community, and put that up there. It wasn't intended to be to get karma or link bait or anything. And in fact, there wasn't a lot of traffic around it, but people keep this. Paul Graham doesn't link to it for whatever reason, and so people discover it every now and then and resubmit it, and then it gets voted up. As for the other posts, yeah, I don't write anything for link bait. I just think my interest is like almost directly overlaid with Hacker News, so my blog posts appeal to the community a lot.
So did you hire anyone to do that, or you're doing that yourself? You're putting together all the links from Ask Hacker News?
I put together all those links, yep.
You
I haven't up
manually.
I manually did that, yep. I haven't done it, I haven't updated it in a long time, but yeah, it took a long time to put together.
How much time do you spend on stuff like that, on interacting with the community, not directly with feedback that's aimed at DuckDuckGo, but interacting with the community?
A lot. I mean, if you count blogging, I don't know how many hours, but I mean, I spend a lot of my time thinking, doing that and thinking about that and, trying to help out.
How many would you say in a day?
I don't know. I mean, at least an hour, right? I
Okay.
mean, surfing and reading stuff and trying to respond to stuff.
Reddit, to be honest, I haven't been reading enough about the work that I haven't been on Reddit enough to say what you're doing there and to ask intelligent questions. So let's move on to your blog. I've been checking out your blog for a long time. The only thing I'll say on Reddit is that ask me anything question that you have. Really helpful. Everybody came, you responded to as many people as you possibly could, even some of the knuckleheads who just had a bunch of jokey comments in there. And it's nice to see that you're out there and interacting. So that's all I'll say about Reddit, the blog. How do you come up with the blog posts?
It's not hard to come up with my blog posts. I constantly come up with ideas from blog posts from reading stuff on Hacker News and other places, and I have a long list of a Google Doc that I have that has tons of blog post ideas.
What kind of
But
blog posts? Teach us, because I'm not as good a blogger as you are, and most people aren't, which is why we're not reading their blogs. Teach us what it takes to be interesting on a blog.
I think you have to well, first of all, I'm just getting started, so I don't really know. But from looking at I often don't know which posts are going to be successful on a side note. Like, I'll put out something that I thought was pretty good, and no one really likes it. Then something else people take to it. I think you got to say something. You got to put yourself out there a little bit. I think a lot of posts are too just like wishy-washy,
What do you
or
mean?
there's
Can you
not.
give me an example of a post where you put yourself out there?
Yeah, like, let me see here. I did a post on single founders and saying, I've done a bunch of posts with single founders and trying to dispel sort of myths about them and them being less successful and getting funding and stuff like that. Recently, I did a post on liquidation preferences on angel investing, and most of the feedback was negative on it, I'd say. But I think people are generally not willing to put stuff out there where they're not sure of the post, and they may get criticized for it. And I just think you got to get beyond that.
What about ad tests? What I think has been especially interesting is seeing the blog post you did about the ad you bought on Reddit, or a couple of other ad tests that you did. I think you did one with the founder of Dream It Ventures. Do you do any of those just to show other people what worked, just because it's an easy way to get a blog post that, not an easy way to get a blog post, but a way to create useful blog posts that even if you fail, you've taught people and it's been helpful?
Absolutely. I think that's another category of things that people don't generally want to do blog posts on, which is share data from their company. And I know you've
which
had-
Which is what? I'm sorry?
Share data about their company and what they're doing, like real data and what their costs were and everything. I know you've had Patrick McKenzie on from Bingo Card. He does that with even his sales and stuff. I think those are great posts. And so I just want to, if I do that, a new advertising platform, I think a lot of people, like I did one on Reddit, you know, don't want to figure out whether they should be doing it or not. So I'm helping them take that step by explaining exactly what I did, how much it costs, and what I got from it. So I have a few more that I've been messing around with that I'll eventually have posts on. I've been messing around with Adly and New York Times, and PickFu is one I did yesterday. It's not really an advertising site, but usability testing.
What did you think of Adly?
Adly, I have not had great success with. I found it really hard to actually spend money on Adly because all my stuff was denied for inexplicable reasons, and I went out and contacted everyone who supposedly denied it and figured out what was going on. And then when I have managed to spend the money, it hasn't really yielded much.
Adly is a company that lets you do in-stream advertising. Right now, basically, it's advertising in people's Twitter accounts and their Twitter streams. So when you contacted them and said, why didn't you run my ad, what did they say?
So about 70% of the people said they never even received anything from Adly that said they should authorize it. So I guess that the time, you set a time limit when your ad runs out. I'm guessing the time limit just ran out, and then they just said, their UI says literally denied. It doesn't say expired. And so I assume that meant they denied it, but it may just have meant that the time expired. But then I did reach some people who said they did deny it, and they said either two things. One, they never really intended to have an ad on it. They just signed up for Adly, and when it came to actually put an ad on it, they're like, whoa, I don't really want to do ads. Or two, they weren't familiar with the product, and so they wouldn't do it. And which I find a little odd, because that's basically going to be everything that gets advertised through Adly they're not going to be familiar with. Anyway, so that was the reason.
Okay. My brother actually had some good results from Adly. I forget what his exact numbers were, but it was pretty effective for him, he said.
I'd be really interested to know.
Sorry?
I'd be really interested to know what he did. Like, did he go – I didn't go the pay – $5,000 for like the massive celebrity. I took a much more scientific approach to who I was going to do. But anyway.
You look for people who are better fits.
I looked for people who had high influence on Twitter and who had a lot of retweets.
Oh, and they give you that data.
They don't. That's another problem with Adly. They don't give you any of that. So I sort of I figured out how to access their data. I downloaded it. I mixed it with InfoChimps and Twitter's API, and then I decided who to do based on that.
Interesting. You know, that might be a product on its own to figure out who's got influence on Twitter. All right, let's see what else I've got here in the notes. I asked you about the T-shirt, MIT. I should have known that. Joe, edit out the fact that I didn't know MIT right away. Just make me look smarter, please. Talk to the editor right there. What age were you when you started that company, the Names Database?
I was
or when you when you launched that site, not the company.
The site launched in April 2003, and the actual site, I think I was 23 at the time.
23, and when you sold?
26.
26. All right, that's going to be for my headline. You know, I like to have the age of the person and how much money they sold it for. So it'll be how a 23-year-old built a $10 million company with no outside funding. And I need to include your name or DuckDuckGo in there because people on Hacker News are real big fans of it. what else do I have? Traction. Why are you doing interviews around Traction?
This is another thing related to the Hacker News community in a way. Like a lot of people post, you know, review my site or after the fact, I'm not getting traction. How can I get it? And so I see that as the most common recurring question. And then I also see it offline in the Philadelphia startup community. I put up a site. Why isn't it taking off? And how do I get it to take off? And I see that as the most common question and barrier for startups taking off. And so I wanted to sort of, or I want to, I haven't done that much work on it. I want to, you know, analyze that a little more scientifically and see if I can come up with something.
Sorry, the connection on my side was going away. You want to analyze that, you want to analyze the traction that people who had it got.
Well, more than that. So like I've already come to a number of conclusions about it, that there are different types of ideas and that influences a lot, that there are a set of, I call traction verticals, different ways that you can get traction for your company, and really you need to approach it systematically and see if you can get any of them to work for you. And I find that a lot of entrepreneurs pretty much overlook about half of them. Either they don't know they exist or don't take them seriously. And so I think there can be sort of a systematic approach to it. I mean, there's the whole like lean startup customer development thing, which I think is great. I actually like that. But I think that's only one part of the puzzle.
You want to create, let me just raise the volume here. We were getting an echo, so I lowered the volume, and when I lowered it, somehow screwed up with my ability to hear what you were saying. So you want to basically put together a menu of options for getting traction, and then allow a startup to say, well, this one doesn't really work for me. This one doesn't apply either. That one is a good one to try. That one over there is a definite surefire fit with my business. Let me go out there and use at least those from the menu. Is that essentially
exactly.
it? And yep. then I mean, that, you want to attach that, to each one of them a company that's done it?
I don't know what form it'll take, but that's basically what I'm thinking. Is like certainly on each vertical, have an expert and a company explain exactly what they did and how the best practices and things like that.
Okay. How long have you been now with DuckDuckGo?
It's probably been 2.5 years.
Okay. Well, actually, it's too early then to ask those questions. What? I'm starting to lose it a little bit here. What I was gonna ask was a series of questions around how do you know when it's gonna be enough? Are you on the right track? But at 2 years, it's still early.
Very early. I mean, I believe that I'm on the right track.
What's your goal for it? What do you envision happening here?
I have no particular goal. I mean, I want it to be a great site and a great search engine, and that is really my goal, is to get as many people to use it as their primary search engine as possible. I don't have like milestones or anything. I'm just trying to make that happen in general.
And then would you have a plan for a sale?
Not in the moment. I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to it if the right buyer was there, but I'm not like trying to sell it or building it to flip or anything.
You're just trying to build a great company. You have a vision for what that great site could be and you want to pursue it.
Yep.
Do you get tired of people acting like you're being quixotic over here, like you're just tilting at windmills?
No, I mean, I sort of grew a thick skin at Names Database, and I don't really mind the haters, if you will.
What's it like to be a stay-at-home dad while you're building a business? You get interrupted at any minute, you have obligations beyond work.
It's very difficult, and I don't recommend it.
Why are you doing it?
I'm doing it because I wanted to spend time with my son in his formative years and make sure that I do so.
Frankly, actually, my headlines for Hacker News apparently stink. They don't like my headlines. They think I'm trying to get hits or links with those headlines. I should just crowdsource my headlines. If anyone, I won't post this tomorrow. If anyone has a better headline than the one that I just suggested or a good headline at all, I'll use your headlines. Gabriel, if you have a good headline for this interview, I'll take that
I think
too.
your headlines are great, personally.
Thank you. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. They all think I'm trying to
Nope.
game it.
I actually have trouble coming up with good headlines for my
Isn't
posts,
that a
and I think
pain?
yours are excellent.
Thank you. And then meanwhile, I go to sites like Business Insider. All they have is a headline. It's like a great freaking headline. I click right over. I've got to see it. Then I see that they have two sentences that are original and then copy and paste somebody else's post. And they got me over there. And then that little fire at the side of the post that shows how many people have come to the site just goes up and up and up and up because they're great headline writers.
I mean, headlines are hard. I mean, that's what copy editors like they have their whole career doing. You're like good at it, you know? So you have a formula that works, so why not stick with it?
Guys on Hacker News, don't be haters. Love me back. I love you. I love this whole freaking community. Don't hate me back. All right, I think at this point it's time to end this interview. Gabriel, I'm really glad that you came here and did this interview. I was always curious about the names database. I'm so glad that you were here and were open about it and willing to talk about it. Thanks for doing the interview.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. All right, guys, thank you all for watching. Come back to Mixergy. If Gabriel's all into feedback, I want feedback too. Come back to Mixergy. Give me feedback on everything except for my reading of his t-shirt, because I understand that I could have done a better job on that. And I'll see you in the comments. Bye, everyone.